Hello, and welcome to Oh No, Ross and Carrie, the show where we don't just report on fringe science, spirituality, and claims of the paranormal, but take part ourselves.
Yep, when they make the claims, we show up so you don't have to. I'm Louie Theroux.
And I'm Carrie Poppy.
And I'm Ross Potcher.
And we have an extra special episode for you today where we interview Louie Theroux. We have been fans of his for years.
Big fans.
If you haven't seen Weird Weekends with Louie Theroux, you are missing out.
Yeah, he's done a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
BBC, Channel 4, Panorama.
Fantastic reporter, filmmaker, and he just released a new film that's coming out right now.
Yeah, you're making the I Caught a Fish This Big hands.
And that's how big this movie is. My Scientology movie. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk to Louie about his experience, and we've both seen the film. And highly recommend it to you. Get yourselves to a theater and see My Scientology Movie. We're really thankful for the opportunity to talk to Louie. We didn't get to talk to him for too long, though. And hopefully we'll get to hang out with him again.
Yeah, he was great. So here he is. How are you doing?
I'm good. Really good.
Good.
Nice to be here.
Yeah. Welcome. We are Oh No, Ross and Carrie.
I think I've heard of you guys.
Oh, really?
Wait, did you do a thing about Scientology?
We did.
Yes.
So we went undercover in Scientology for a couple months.
Yeah, I heard about that. Do you know, I haven't listened to it, to my shame. I would love to, though. Weird, I must have read about it on Tony Ortega's site.
Yeah. We were on there.
He very favorably reviewed us.
Yeah, The Guardian covered it, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Man, I should be interviewing you. How long did you go undercover for?
It was for a few months.
Yeah, like 3 months.
Which org did you...
Here, LA org.
Well, yeah.
But which one? Which LA org?
The Blue Building.
The Blue Building.
Yeah.
Because I did... It wasn't exactly undercover, but while I was making my movie, I went up to the Los Feliz mission. Over there on
Celebrity Center.
Hillhurst. No, not the Celebrity Center. They've got a
mission. Oh, yes.
Yes.
The one that's like...
It's nice. It's opposite Froyo.
Next to Mexico
Life.
City.
Near Albertson's.
Yes.
This is we're getting
on Avocado
LA
Street.
Yeah, which would you give a higher Yelp rating, Froyo or the mission?
I feel embarrassed to say this. I'd give Froyo... 5 stars. The mission I'd give 3. I mean, in terms of, and the only, I dock 2 stars only because I don't feel that Scientology's perhaps the best way of getting your religious and spiritual needs met. But in terms of cleanliness and friendliness, they were extremely nice. And I went in there and it actually really does help you kind of get out, because I wanted to get out of this mindset of us and them, which I think affects a lot of the coverage of Scientology and the tendency that when you cover any story at a distance as opposed to being immersed in it, you can easily sort of other them. You can sort of see them as some faceless entities who represent something malevolent and scary. And you go into the org and you realize, okay, no, they're just people. And in fact, they're people who are trying very hard to sell you copies of Dianetics for $20 and sign you up for courses.
Right.
So there's this sort of feeling that you go in, and I said, I'm a documentary maker, and they said, that's wonderful. Ron believed that artistry of any kind was the highest attainment, and you know, what would be for you, you know, take you to the next level of your artistry and being a documentary maker? And I was thinking, like, well, actually, I'm making a film about Scientology.
Yeah, if you'd interview with me.
But
that's a great American accent, by the way.
Oh, yeah, thank you. We sat down, they talked about my problems, and they asked, I'd filled out one of their questionnaires, which is all things like, do you whistle while you work?
Right, right.
Do you sometimes
your personality test.
Yes, the Oxford capacity analysis. That's it. So... And they surprised me by saying something which they said, I thought they were going to say, because you know, when they recruit people in Scientology, they sometimes, the phrase is used, find your ruin.
Yes.
So they'll focus on, okay, you've got a real problem with intimacy, or you've got a problem with your parents. But they said to me, you're very high on the tone scale. Like, you already score. Like they actually told me, like, you're really good.
Oh, uh-huh. And they gave you the chart. And...
Yeah, I can't remember what exactly form the breakdown took, but the point I took from it was like, you're actually really quite high
already. I had
the same
issue.
Really.
They had trouble figuring out like what to send me to.
Yeah.
And ended up telling me, well, you have a really good relationship with your boyfriend. Let's put you in a class about relationships so that when things get bad, you'll have these skills already in place.
Right, right. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. So I felt pretty good, and it's no obstacle, as you said, that they found... I think the recommendation was that I start with a package of 10 or or 20 auditing sessions. I think that's what it was.
Okay. And did you do it? Did
and
you
get no, off and, it? And at that point, I think I begged off. And the interesting thing was that they then said, well, so it'll just be this copy of Dianetics then. That'll be $20. And I was like, well, I don't remember. And I was so blindsided and sort of embarrassed to say, right. You know, that was never part of the deal.
Yeah.
That I found myself giving out $20. And I later mentioned to someone, and apparently, like, part of Scientology is, for some of them, for the regs or the people who specialize in selling services, is sales techniques. And that one they did on me is called, it's closing. It's called, like, the assumed close.
Mm. Okay.
We definitely encountered
that. Where they close the sales as though the sale's been made.
Right.
And it's a
certain strength of character to pull.
It's not often used
because
it's a hard tactic. It's a tactic that probably leaves you afterwards feeling but like you've been mugged. Right.
Uh-huh.
But I think in situations where they've got a sense this guy's not going to buy anything, it's a kind of go for broke.
Yeah.
Because you go out and you're like, why don't that was weird.
They finally sold me a $5 pamphlet. They tried to sell me the classes and I was like, oh, no, thanks. And then they tried to sell me Dianetics. And then finally they were like, how about this $5 pamphlet? And I was like, okay, fine.
The $400 purse seems like a really good deal after you turn down the $2,000 purse.
Right, yeah. Really? Yeah.
But if you were in it for months, you must have done more than buy a pamphlet.
Yeah. So, I mean, after that, we had originally gone just thinking we were going to take the personality test because we were doing an episode about personality testing. And then Ross here talked me into
I totally cheated her
that.
Into this. I did the, well, what is it called? The cost or the
assumed
the sale.
Close?
I did the assumed close. And so we went in for the personality test and then I signed up for classes and kept going back. And I was surprised they didn't Google us immediately or recognize us.
And what would they have found if they'd Googled you?
That we host a popular podcast about infiltrating religious groups.
Really? So you've done it to other groups?
Yeah. So what we do and have done for the last 6 years is join fringe religious groups. And any group that makes, like, a claim that seems a little outside of our scientific understanding
the
of
fringe
the universe.
Science, yeah.
Yeah. So,
and infiltrate is maybe a misleading word just in that we feel a commonality with what you do, and we're all big fans of Weird Weekends and in your work because we try to find the humanity and we make those friendships.
Yeah.
And we'll point out what we think are really good ideas, but give our honest critiques of
the bad ones. Right. That's a much stronger word than I usually use. But I think from their perspective, I think that's how they'd view it.
They would put us at 1-1 on the tone scale, I'm sure.
Yeah.
The 1.1 is the tone scale for that's for journalists and perverts.
Right.
But so how did that at the risk of kind of turning the tables on you, how did it go for you? I'm just curious how that all went.
Well, yeah, we ended up taking quite a few courses. We went through Dianetics and did the, you know, co-auditing. And it got to a certain point where
I'm not sure what co-auditing is.
We audited each other.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how they set it
up. Sit you knee to knee as people were in your film. And, you're starting to walk each other through bad memories from the past and trying to find the basics.
You audited each other?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't
That's
think
how
you
they
could do,
it.
Do that.
I know. I thought that would
Aren't you supposed to be trained to be an auditor?
Right. So when you first go in for your Dianetics training, the way they train you is to set you up with someone you already know and have a relationship with,
mm-hmm.
and they teach you to audit each other. And that's like the first step of your training.
Wow. I did mm-hmm. not know that.
Yeah. Removing engrams even then.
Yeah.
But my understanding was that to be a good auditor is a skill that you have to acquire.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's someone walking around and correcting you as you go. So there's kind of this daddy figure who's mm-hmm. like in the room.
The IC, the in charge.
And he's correcting you as you go. And there's a lot of correction.
Mm-hmm.
So,
But they're even trying to push you towards past life memories, or at least in the womb memories.
Right.
Then you can do auditor training and work your way up, you know, the classes as a auditor.
Did they say earlier similar? Did you come across that?
Oh,
term?
Yeah.
To a previous memory.
Yeah,
with
because the whole thing, like, well, you let's say you've been having problems with your knee, and then they're like, can you remember a time when you had that earlier?
And
then you go back and discover you were a foot soldier.
What's the earliest Caesar. Moment of pain or discomfort, I think was the phrase.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't include anything about the personality test in the film.
No.
It was that...
That was purely as a way of experiencing for myself how you go in at ground level. But I was aware that for the... You know, and early in the process of kind of developing how we would do the film, we thought about, well, do we, and I've seen stuff on TV in the UK where people go undercover, you use hidden cameras, stuff like that. And talking about it, we realized, well, for that to work, because you're sort of using a covert technique, mm-hmm. which has a certain element, I guess, of bad faith in it. You know, you're not going mm-hmm. in with permission. And the feeling was, for that to work, you'd really need to have something explosive. That it would have to be, to be in a feature film, you'd really need, it wouldn't be enough.
To justify
why you're using that technique. And that, in fact, you could probably spend 6 months going to your local org, doing sessions, and it would be interesting, but you wouldn't get to the heart of what is perhaps most fascinating about Scientology, to my mind, which is the years of dedication that take place inside the Sea Org,
right.
and the personality of David Miscavige himself, and how the whole thing is operated at the highest levels.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I found that when we joined, we were like really surprised by how boring the process was.
Yes, I was trying not to use that word.
yeah, I mean, because you hear all these stories of the abuse, which is, clearly there from the ex-members. But we were really surprised by like, wow, this is like a very tedious process. Were there emotions that surprised you about the Scientology process?
In terms of when I went in, I spent maybe a few hours talking to the person who was telling me, you know, analyzing my results. I was just surprised how it was like walking onto a car lot, you know, or any place where you think, okay, before I go in, I better have my defenses up so that I don't walk out with a Honda Civic that I don't need, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so even having read about it, I was surprised. Like, wow, that really is true. Like, they really do. It's not like going
and even
into,
so, they blindsided you with that.
With my whole like Dianetics book, and I think you know, that's not like the experience of going into a Quaker friend's house or a Catholic church or a synagogue
Unitarian.
Or whatever. You know, like it's the easiest thing in the world. At a service, you know, like at Christmas, I tend to be the only time I go to church, right? And they pass little bags around the collection. It is not, you just pass it along. You don't have to put anything
right.
in that,
right?
So that part of it, I thought, wow, that really is fascinating. How how they generate their revenue. But in terms of how I in making my film, I think what was most amazing to me was, and again, I suppose I should have seen it coming, but it's how aggressive they can be in terms mm-hmm. of fighting back. That they really
fighting
do,
back at you as a reporter.
As a reporter, okay. Right? And that, you know, yes, we were tailed by, you know, there's the day when the private investigators get on you know, and start tailing you. And you're like, oh my God, they actually have hired a private investigator.
And people came with cameras.
And they start filming you.
Did you feel that that was, how savvy do you think they are? Because wouldn't it have been smarter in their case to just ignore you completely?
Absolutely. You know, and I've been thinking that for years, that, well, if they would just figure out that what most people find amazing about Scientology is really the lengths they go to sort of upset, harass and intimidate
right.
the journalists who cover them, and how that's always the most exciting bit of any film on Scientology, really,
right.
is the bit where the guy pops up from across the road and begins filming mysteriously.
And they could have easily robbed you of that.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
And it was a fear that they would perhaps do that. But the thing that you have to understand is it's not really an option for Scientologists to not do that, because it's so deeply ingrained
yeah.
in the tech and in L. Ron Hubbard's
writings.
That said,
they didn't do it to us. They didn't follow us at all. I mean, maybe we were two small beans, but they didn't care. They found out who we were at
yeah.
the end. They
yeah.
kicked us out, and they haven't stalked us at all.
And other observers have told us that maybe they're learning, or they're having to pick their battles now. Maybe
right.
it's just that we picked the right time to do
well,
it.
Well, here's the thing. They are fighting battles on so many different fronts, and you've had Going Clear, which came out. You've got people like Tony Ortega, who blogs regularly
mm-hmm.
daily about Scientology. You've got Leah Remini's very high profile series.
Yeah.
You had
that's a lot of battles to fight.
You had Ron Miscavige's book,
right,
which came out. You had other books coming out.
Yeah, his niece.
They
as
had
well.
Me and my Scientology movie. You had Jenna Miscavige's book. They have to pick their battles. Their, you know, their resources are not limitless.
Yeah.
I think actually though you're right in as much as they seem to have decided that they seem to have decided that they will reserve their most vengeful behavior for ex-members who speak out.
Yes, I think so too.
And when we were filming, I was aware that the things that were happening to me were very small compared with what they were doing to my contributors, and in particular to Marty Rathbun, who's our main contributor. And they would pop up at the airport and intimidate and hurl abuse at him. And then in the end scene, they send two bearded guys out to arrive unannounced and begin... It's almost as though they've sat around brainstorming what is the worst, most upsetting thing we can say to Marty Rathbun.
So upset about his kids.
We'll make allegations about his kid,
right,
and that will really get him where it hurts, and they turn up and start talking about that stuff.
Right, which, you know, when that scene pops up, for me, the things they said like didn't seem all that triggering to me, but clearly they knew it would be triggering for
him. They're taking the person in his life about whom he cares more than anyone else, and also the person who symbolizes a kind of a second chance at life that he's jumped at, right?
They knew it was for him.
His child, his baby child, who's probably at that time a year and a half years old. So they could have talked about his wife, or they could have talked about his two brothers, one, you know, who were both passed away in circumstances that would be upsetting to anyone. They could have talked about his ex-wife, but they chose to talk about his child. And I think it's because, you know, when you leave Scientology, you're starting, you feel like you've got so much baggage and so many wasted years. And then you think, is it possible to rebuild myself? Is it possible to actually start from the ground up? And it's like, I think, you know, analogous to coming out of prison, where you think, well, what is the internet? You know, how do you write a check? Or all these life skills that...
You become very defensive about those lifelines.
Yeah, these, the ways that people, you know, you're just conscious of everything that... in life that you somehow don't know how to do. And then his child becomes the chance of someone in his life who's not in any way tainted by the association with Scientology. And then for the two guys to say, you basically, what they're saying is, you only got that kid as a way of making money. That's the allegation they made to him. And he, you know, they couldn't have thought, it was like kicking him in the nuts, really.
We saw a shift in his reaction in the film to you personally.
Marty's.
And at first Marty was kind of annoyed by some of your questions, but then he seemed to really kind of turn on you after those cameramen left. What happened there?
Well, what happens is, fairly or unfairly, I took that as my moment to put to him the idea that everything that he found most upsetting about how they were treating him in terms of... tailing him with private investigators, using psychological techniques to push his buttons, that he had done versions of that to other people when he'd been inside Scientology. So that's what I said. And he, I don't even know that he would necessarily disagree with that. I think his issue was, why are you choosing this moment to bring that up at the time when I'm on the verge of tears? I'm thinking about my child. I'm thinking about how difficult my life has been made by all these people in Scientology. And you're just kicking me when I'm down. And so that's why he had that reaction.
Because it seems like he would have a ready response to that.
Yes. The response was rage.
Right.
Well, rage is maybe too strong, but it was extreme annoyance. He said, go fuck yourself.
Right. And now, since the film has come out, he's written about the film.
Yeah.
He's not a fan. And so he's also written, I see like a commonality between how he's reacted to your film and how he reacted to Ron Miscavige's book.
Yes.
Which was very surprising. So he came out against your film kind of saying, they got what they wanted. They wanted, Louis wanted Scientology to stalk him back. He got what he wanted. He provoked all this. And then he also said Ron Miscavige kind of picked at the worst parts of his son and highlighted them. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't all as bad as he thought. Do you think maybe Marty has kind of flipped back and is kind of back in cahoots with Scientology in some way?
Well, I don't know about cahoots, but I think there is a bigger context, which is to do with Marty kind of suing for peace with Scientology, deciding that he's tired, and he was tired even when we were with him, of being seen as the champion of anti-Scientology. He saw that as very reductive and kind of almost puerile, like the idea that, oh, I'm going to lead the forces of anti-Scientology and we're going to rescue all the Scientologists. You know, Marty's got a very sophisticated and nuanced take on all these subjects. He's never fit easily into either the pro or anti-Scientology camps. And so I think he just was fed up with kind of being the... of having to carry all the dreams of these anti-Scientologists, some of whom probably are a little over the top, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of how they react or, you know, in their failure to sort of see the full picture. And so now Marty's stated position is that he sees anti-Scientology as more cult-like than Scientology. And he's on the record of saying that.
Yeah.
And so he, you know, I think we've kind of fell under that rubric a bit, and I don't know what his relationship with David Miscavige is now, if there is one, or what his relationship with official Scientology is now, but I think he feels he's done with the whole subject. And I would say that when we first showed him, he seemed to enjoy the process of making the film, most of it. I enjoyed working with him. When he first saw the film, he liked it, and then something changed.
Oh, when he first saw the completed film.
Yes.
Oh.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
I feel like there's more of a story there.
Yeah.
That perhaps he's not willing to share.
Yeah.
Well,
we're getting the flag.
We would love to talk to you all day.
We'll do it again next time. I'm going to look forward to checking out your...
Yeah, please do.
That'd be fantastic.
Infiltration.
When we heard...
I used the wrong word. I did it wrong.
when we heard that you'd been living here for a year, we were immediately bummed. Like, oh, yeah, we should have been hanging with
Lily.
We really are huge fans. And really
of
love
yours. You're giving me a blank stare, like of what?
That was my normal stare.
We love that stare. I think it's a great journalistic device.
You're supposed to have a stare, a glare of a dedicated something. There's a Scientology glare that you're supposed to have.
I think you could teach them a thing
We talked about that in the film. Tom Cruise has it. That was my one, does it?
Okay. Oh, yes. You're very good at silence.
A dedicated glare is the term.
One of the things that we both said is Louis is so good at silence, at using silence to get things out of people. Don't do it to me, Louis.
Do it to me. But, you know, signaling to someone that they have not given you a sufficient answer, and then they just kind of keep offering. Anyways, we love it. And we love you. And thanks, everybody, guys. See my Scientology movie.
Not this week. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Take care.
Well, our thanks to Louis Theroux
for being on our show. That was awesome.
That was so great.
And hopefully we get to do it again.
I tried to surreptitiously take a picture of him when he was doing an interview with someone else before us.
How'd that work out?
He looked right over at me.
Oh, he is on it.
He like immediately, like he felt it and looked right over at me. I mean, not even in an accusatory way. It was just like, why are you hiding that? Like, we both know you're taking a picture of me. You're going to have me in a second. Let's calm it down.
That's awesome. Yeah. How did it turn out?
So anyway, he and I are best friends. This is pretty good.
All right.
Then when you and I interviewed him, he was like, let's take a picture together. And it's a, you know, much closer up picture.
We'll use that one.
Yeah. Anyway, I think he and I are very close now. And he considers me one of his closest friends.
Really, I think he looks up to you.
I think so too. I mean, he's quite tall for that, but.
That's true. He looks up to very few people physically.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, big fans of Louis Theroux and what he does.
You know what else I'm a big fan of?
Puppies.
True. Well, actually, Rod.
Okay, doggies.
Dogs.
That's where we're going.
If we're going to be honest, I like a senior dog more than a puppy.
Oh, no. I opened up a can of dogs.
But let's discuss. No, not really. I love the holy month of Max Fun Drive.
Oh, my goodness. This is March 2017. It is Max Fun Drive month.
Yes.
And Max Fun Drive is coming very soon. It's coming
March 20th, 2017.
We've already released this month an episode about the Seventh-day Adventists.
Oh, you said it.
Yes. Well, we revealed that they are the Seventh-day Adventists. Amazing fact.
Well, a subdivision within the Seventh-day Adventists.
A non-official wing of the Seventh-day Adventists.
Yeah.
Then we've just released this Louis Theroux episode that you've heard. Next week, we're going to be releasing part 3 of Amazing Facts.
Yes. And that's going to be one of the best episodes of the year, Ross.
Indeed.
Because it will be sprinkled with the magic fairy dust of Max Fun Drive. Well,
tune in during the Max Fun Drive to catch that awesome episode and to hear about some of the exclusive thank you gifts that we have in store for new and upgrading members.
And you can also tune into the other shows because all of the shows on the Max Fun Network are going to be releasing extra special, perfect, best of the year episodes to celebrate this, our hallowed Max Fun Drive.
We're going to have some special goals that you're going to want to meet. So
you'll be driven.
And show your support for our show and all your other favorite shows.
And okay, we want you to help us reach our highest goal ever. We're trying to get 10,000 new and upgrading Max Fun members. Now that's the whole network.
Yes.
10,000, you guys. Now, if you're already a member, you might be thinking, well, I'm already counted for. Mm-hmm. No, sir. Mm-hmm. Or ma'am. Mm-hmm. You can be upgrading and that still counts.
Oh, and then you'll get like all of those special bonuses that we're talking
mm-hmm.
about?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds like a good deal for everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
So when our next episode comes out, make sure to grab it right away and listen because we're going to have all kinds of exciting stuff to tell you about.
And we're going to announce some super cool goals that you guys can achieve that's going to unlock some super cool content. I can't say more!
But tune in.
The 2017 Max Fun Drive kicks off on March 20th and runs for just 2 weeks. So visit MaximumFun.org for details and don't miss it.
And remember...
Hello, can I just give you a letter? We're doing a documentary about Scientology. Wait, I've got...
Scientology.
A religion created by a sci-fi writer, run by a mysterious leader, David Miscavige.
So this is my chance to experience Scientology firsthand.
You need to leave.
How are you doing, Mr. Squirrel?
You guys are trespassing.
Got anything to say?
It's okay, we have a permit.
Why are you here?
He's right behind us now.
We have their attention.
Why are they doing this?
It's just not like any church that you can think of.
Ben, we've been accused of so many things over the course of making The Greatest Generation, the Star Trek podcast, that we're a little bit embarrassed to be making.
The embarrassment lies squarely on us, and you can listen anonymously and safely.
Would you like to meet up for some anonymous podcast listening?
This is a podcast you definitely won't want your parents to find on your phone when you pass away suddenly. Discovered by an innocent hotel maid.
They'll make up something else at your funeral. Something more tasteful, like you were listening to Bullseye.
We, of course, have permanently shamed ourselves by making this podcast and putting our real names on it, but you don't have to.
It's a regret we feel several times a week.
Subscribe and delete The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast. Yes, we are actually making a Star Trek podcast.
We should submit that one.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.